if you're watching, you just saw me banging my head for Busted Pencil Saturday, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, yeah, me, Dr. Tim Slecker, we are here. Like I said, if you're listening live across all those civic media stations, recording functions, apps, welcome. Glad you're with us. Anybody also, you know, downloading the podcast? Hey, we love you too. My fellas, what is going on? I don't even want to say what is going on in the world, because the answer to that question could take up a whole show. So, Jacob, how about you first thing here on a Saturday? What is one thing going on in the world that you think is worth acknowledging?
Geez, Tim, there's, like you said, there's so much going on right now. Something going on in the world that I'm paying a lot of attention to is this whole Elon Musk versus President Donald Trump feud. And it's not just because I have a wide interest in politics and, I have a stake in our country and I care about America and I care about my fellow citizens. More importantly, Tim, this weekend, my dad and I switched cars. So I'm driving a Tesla around right now.
Ooh.
And so thankfully, I might not get egged because Elon is anti-Trump for this weekend. So I have saved myself from that. So that is I do care about the country, Tim.
Okay.
So that's 1% of why I'm paying attention to this story. 99% because I didn't want to be ostracized from my community for the EV I happen to be driving right now.
Oh man. Johnny, I know you ain't sporting no EVs.
I mean, I wish I was. I mean, I'm a big fan of electric vehicles. I think they're great. Alternative to, you know, our over dependency on fossil fuels right now, and inevitably that's the direction transportation is going to be having to go. I would have predicted a decade ago sooner than now, but here we are. And you know, keeping up with the spat this week has been entertaining. I'm enjoying, you know, the many posts and memes about, you know, Elon and Trump and Elon's speaking some truth in terms of, you know, sharing the dirt on his involvement in the election. So, you know, it's been interesting to see these two from glass houses throw stones at each other. It's been interesting to say the least, but it's, you know, it's beautiful outside. I've wrapped up my month of teaching. So that was an exciting momentous Thursday. And I hopped on the show the other day. We did a recording for Producer's Choice. If you didn't get to listen to that, loop back around to Friday's excellent Producer's Choice segment. But you know, I got to do that from campus. Unfortunately, not from my office because they're already renovating and doing construction on the College of Ed on my campus. I couldn't get in, but I was able to join by an app from the car. So when in doubt, you can always make it happen. Tim, you showed us that this week too, in your commute on I-70. But lots of stuff happening, man. Lots of things.
Yeah. Lots of things. Well, and you had to mention and remind everybody about the dismal appearance from Interstate 70, where actually the cricket sound effects that Jacob inserted were much more entertaining than listening to me babble on as big trucks.
Good. That's good. I mean, now, popped in, shared some knowledge, and you know, kept it moving. So that was the point. Smooth moves, Tim.
Now, I know, you know, we originally had Jonathan Gierko, and I really, before we even talk, you know, really deeply, we're talking, you know, Jonathan has been really good about providing some sense around the idea that what happened at the Supreme Court with the religious charter school in Oklahoma, the Supreme Court, because it was a 4-4 vote, means that the Oklahoma Supreme Court ruling, which said that, no, you can't do that, it's unconstitutional, will stand. Jonathan was going to join us, and I know, Johnny, we're going to, you know, talk a little bit about this, but what I've been seeing in the world, of course, is what both you and Jacob were saying, but there's another thing though. And I just thought about this, Johnny, and I swear to you, it's not a Tim bomb I'm going to throw at you. I'm just seriously interested in asking you this question. All of the, Trump, Elon, kind of in one way, again, serves a little bit of a distraction about all of the things that are going on. And I know we've talked about this before, but, you know, Trump's executive order, the war with Harvard, and then it's developing into the executive order, which is essentially trying to say, no more international students. And I was just thinking about this, you're at a major research institution. And, you know, if you have any like thoughts just yourself, how much would that, diminish the culture on your campus if truly international students didn't show up next fall?
Well, that's an interesting question, Tim. One, I think it's a little bit of I know you might be alluding to like the chilling effect of the Trump beef with Harvard in the shadows of the Trump beef with Elon right now. It's like, what's the constant here?
Mm-hmm.
Trump beefs. But if we just talk about higher ed, I think it's preposterous, and we've said it in regards to Harvard, the request, I can't even say request, the mandate from the Trump administration that Harvard, not have any international students. It's preposterous. And we spoke about it in reference to Harvard. And I would say the same, and I can't speak for my entire institution and certainly not for
of
it. But as someone in higher ed for 20 plus years now, part of being in an institution of higher education and at many levels, I think this is even true for our community college and our directional schools. And in higher ed, we have these tiers like research one as a classification, research two, blah, 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 all these things. And I think that landscape is changing. And I'm at a land grant mission university. And what that means, you're familiar with them. If you're mm-hmm. in a state, like there's, a state school, they're usually like Michigan State or Washington State or Arizona State.
Penn State.
They're land grant institutions. And what's unique about those kinds of schools is that they are developed, designed, and in service of kind of the local. And when I say the local, I don't mean quite just the city or county that they're in, but the state and region. So they have a mission first and foremost to educating that region. So I think that's always been the case for an institution like mine. And part of conceptualizing what's the best kind of education you can offer, say, kids, students, of any age in a region, is to include in that experiences with diverse cultures.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's the dog whistle right there, right? So there's where a particular political view might say, well, that's what we're trying to get rid of. And it's like, at what expense, right? It's devaluing the quality of education for everyone when you essentially monoculturalize it, right? And so one of the values of going to school in general, whatever school it is you get to meet different people and you get to have conversations with folks who had different life experiences. Say if you grew up a rural kid and you're going to a land grant school, you get to go to school with other rural kids. Mm. And I shouldn't say kids because students are of all ages. You get to be in class with, folks from rural communities and urban communities and students from other countries. And you get to talk with one another about life, about the things you're learning, and about where you want to go in your careers and be part of what we call like a global view or a world view. And that isn't at the detriment of nationalism. That isn't saying like it's to weaken our country. It's to be, in conversation and learning with diverse people as in a global world.
Right.
Whether you're going to marketing, communications, business, architecture, history, philosophy, you know, anything in the humanities, the English language arts, you know, whether you're going to be a writer or a designer or, you know, computer programmer or an engineer or in the medical field, we're part of a global community. So yes, we want to strengthen our nation. That's obviously part of it. But part of strengthening our nation is being able to be in conversation and collaboration with people around the world. So that said, like I sidestepped the economic piece.
Right.
And I'm fortunate enough, and I'm, you know, I have colleagues at a number of institutions that will speak to the importance of enrollment across the board right now. And, you know, I would say all of them will be fine if they didn't have, like financially fine if they didn't have international students. But the quality of education would go down.
Yeah.
And that's antithetical to all of our efforts right now. It's like we want to be leaders in the world in education. Well, you can't be that if you're exclusionary. You know, we've critiqued for years, you know, exclusionary politics like North Korea. And, you know, it's like, and now we're starting to propose things like mandates that you don't have international students.
Right.
Well, that's not how the world works. And that's actually not preparing our learners for the world that's ahead of them. So I think universities across the country and really around the world are going to have something to say about that in terms of, hold on, because this actually doesn't help access and doesn't increase or improve student achievement.
Mm-hmm.
It harms both those things. And those are two, for us at a land grant institution, those are two really important things, the success of our students locally and as they learn to, you know, work with people around the world, which also includes the success of students from around the world.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of my answer for you, Tim.
Man, it's a lot though. And I really, that's seriously, I just wanted to, you know, touch on that because I know the perspective that you're pointing forward. What you said towards the end though, Johnny, when you said, you know, like North Korea, and it was just like, yeah, do you know anybody who is talking about or thinking about going, boy, I'm really hoping to get into College B in North Korea because no, that doesn't happen.
Well, you can't.
It's exclusionary.
People, if it was, you know, different.
Well, you could, but there's not a history. And in fact, the fact that, you know, this is, and I've been, you know, listening to Prof. G. Scott Galloway Pod, and he's been making a great point. American education is one of our most incredibly strong export assets that we have. People across the globe are, I don't want to use the word dying, but really want to get into American colleges, American higher education institutions. Why is that? It's because of the quality that they know an American institution brings when they come back and all those things. So what are we doing by excluding people? I think we're watering down the brand. Hey, let's go a little bit more with that. Busted Pencils, fully leaded. You know, hey, America the brand, it's higher education. We're back. Who? Dr. Tim, Dr. Johnny Jacob, Chairman of the Board, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Yeah, we did. We mentioned the Trump Elon thing, but, you know, we're moving on. And yeah, we're, you know, the charter school, the unconstitutionality of a religious charter school. We know we're going to really try to hold on to a lot of that conversation for one of our greatest guests, Dr. Jonathan Gierko. I threw Johnny, you know, not a Tim bomb for a change.
Oh, timely discussion.
And just saying, you know, again, it looks like it's Harvard, the president saying no international students, but, you know, the effect of, you know, what would it mean if institutions of higher education, and you said, Johnny, we're not talking about the financial part of that. What would it mean to have our institutions of higher education devoid of the international student body that comes to all of our institutions. And I know you gave a really great detailed, you know, kind of sense of your land grant institution and you, your own personal sense of that. You said you wanted to, you know, kind of boil that down. So take it away, my friend.
Well, Tim, I think what we're getting into, if we're to, you know, really dive into the Trump versus Harvard beef, and that's what I want to call it, is, you know, is a multi-million dollar, you know, attack on Harvard. But why Harvard? Well, we know some of the personal reasons that Trump has expressed his beef with Harvard. But additionally, you know, it's what, the oldest university in the United States.
Yeah.
It's known worldwide as, you know, as like a symbol of higher education in North America and in our country. And it's, you know, it's a great institution, like many peer institutions and even institutions that aspire to have that kind of, you know, that the kind of bar set for what it means to have access to high quality education, to be, you know, in a world diverse conversation with the leading experts on whatever it is that field is that you're studying. You know, you had said it's eroding the brand. And it's an attack on that. But Tim, I'm gonna give you two things that also is and why I believe it's happening. It is also an effort to erode democratic values. So that's one. And two, it's an effort to be in the media in a way that furthers discrimination against immigrants and against it's political discourse to other groups of people, right? And what I mean by others, I'll put quotes around that, the process of othering, of sort of pushing outside of the center or moving outside and then devaluing. Because Trump had said, hey, what I'm doing here is trying to create more access for students in the US. And in fact, he said for the working class, which we've talked about on previous shows, but I wanted to bring it back up. It's like, yeah, that's a myth.
Right.
Like Harvard is dedicated to the working class people of this country, as are many other institutions of higher ed. And I think it's important to pay attention to these attacks on Harvard because it's symbolic of what's possible to every other university. So if we were really serious about increasing access for, you know, citizens of this country, for the working class, you know, across the entire country, well, then we would take a serious look at how we fund public education. We would look at, you know, student loans and these kinds of things.
Right.
And do a whole bunch of redesigning to make it more accessible, because by and large, what that is become is a system of occurring, you know, like impossible to get out of debt.
Yeah.
And so that's played a value. But the thing I want to get to about that political discourse to other groups, to othering groups, is that what that does when he says, I'm trying to create access for American students, it immediately sets up in the language, you know, a group of us versus them.
Exactly.
Part of that anti-immigrant, anti-world, anti-diverse culture sentiment that's at the core of Trump's politics.
Yeah.
So, and again, and I'm going to loop it back around to that first point I made. It's an attempt to erode democratic values, because democratic values, remember, those we listed them out on many shows.
Oh, many, many.
You know, when we talk about democracy and we talk about public education being a bedrock of democracy, well, we talk about everybody has a voice and that voice is valued. Everybody has a responsibility to participate and all decisions are made in the interest of the common good. Well, Trump's declaration and attacks on Harvard sort of, you know, practice this unilateral decision-making that is anti-democratic. You know, it moves away from state rights, education as a state right. It moves away from, you know, local decision-making around what constitutes public education and democracy. And it says one person essentially, or one person and their group, right? That we can give it the moniker of the Trump administration. It's not just him. Right, is interested in exercising and telling the citizenry that we will function unilaterally in anti-democratic ways. So it's an erosion of democracy. It's a genius political campaign in terms of it successfully makes an enemy. You know, it identifies groups of people that are not American citizens as the enemy, as the problem, as, you know, being on our campus as, you know, a hotbed. I can't remember the exact quote Trump used, but I remember he had said, you know, like that Harvard campus, you know, which could be true for any of our campuses, are, you know, harboring, you know, people opposed to democracy, which couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, but it sets up this whole scare campaign that, hey, these people that might not look like us or speak the same language as us or come from the same communities that we were born in, well, you know what? They're a problem and I'm getting rid of them. Mm. And so it aligns to his anti-immigrant sentiment. It ultimately is anti-democratic and it's an attempt to erode democracy. You know, I think it's important that we're looking at it. So, Tim, I'm glad you threw me that question today.
Yeah. No, I, you know, and got a little bit more. The way you talked about othering, Johnny, when we get back, I want to kind of push on that. I like, but explore another way othering. Yeah, othering. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, Education Talk. We'll be right back. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, Chairman of the Boards, and me, Dr. Tim Slecker. We're here, yeah. Johnny, we're, you know, the whole idea of, you know, and I know it's contextualized in Harvard, and people are like, you know, why, you know, that doesn't affect my institution. Well, I want to say... I didn't say you. I can hear people going, you know, well, okay, look, it's Harvard, you know, so my local regional state university, I mean, you know, we're fine. It doesn't affect us. And I'm going to say, really? Because I think it sends the world a message that isn't about you're not welcome at Harvard. You're not welcome in America.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to spread that sentiment. Yeah.
You know, and so Jacob, you hear what I'm saying, man?
I definitely hear what you're saying, Tim. I think you're absolutely hitting the nail on the head there. All these efforts by the Trump administration, you can look at what they're doing and you can look at how did the American people feel about something like the immigration situation. Most people felt that it was a bit out of control. Most people said they wanted to see more controls. But is that what he did? I think you could say that a different president could come in with that situation and maybe dial back the numbers coming through the border or tighten up security. He went for the most cruel options possible on every front when it comes to people at the border, finding people who have been here for decades in the country and publicly, you know, being cruel to these people, embarrassing people, dragging them out of their schools, bringing them to these detention centers in Louisiana. It's all done, and I think it's all done on purpose to show people this is not a welcoming place for people across the world to visit. You know, do not come here. And I think that's very intentional, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. It's intentional. And and I hear that and I see that. And I'm going to say, you know, I didn't go to a big prestigious institution for my undergraduate. I went to a local regional state public institution. And, you know, as an 18-year-old from Homestead, Pennsylvania, right outside of Pittsburgh, the steel mills, you know, I was probably what you would say pretty sheltered. And the whole idea, John, you were saying of othering, what I experienced was really my first taste of others and realizing that this kind of simple me, very, you know, sheltered world view, it got bigger, even on this little local regional state institution that had international students from Pakistan, from Germany, on our campus. And, you know, for students like me, my classmates who were all very similar, you know, blue collar, first generation kids. That was all of our kind of first experience of realizing there are others, and that those others are not people to push away, to kind of stay away from, to keep out, but to realize that we're part of a much bigger something at that time. And that experience for me, and I got to imagine across the, you know, that is something that is, you can't put a price on. It's part of what it means to become educated. It's a part of recognizing that you are, you know, your otherness is actually kind of potentially, others are not people to run away from, to hide from, to ban connection with. We want more experiences with others. And that intentionality of institutions of higher education, of opening the doors for international students to come, the benefit of that is so incredibly valuable that when I look at what could potentially happen now to an institution where I was, the fact that maybe students are now thinking, you know, in different parts of the world, you know, I wasn't even thinking about going to Harvard. I was thinking of going to, you know, a Penn State, a great engineering school, because, you know, and now they're not going to go. You know, they're not going to come to those places. And what's lost, and I'm not going to say that Trump has no idea that that's what will be lost. You're right. I think he knows exactly that would be lost. But this is the kind of way that I think if we have more conversations, and now, John, I'm going to go back to old busted pencils, our neighbors, if they got to hear conversations about international students on campuses across America as not others, but as part of an educational experience that is something that is to be treasured, and the type of discourse, the connections, the realization that there is more in life than just me and who my family is and who my friends are, I don't think you'd get as much kind of buy-in to the Trump message of trying to keep international students out of the country. And I'm just, you know, that day, it's just, how do we have conversations with our neighbors about this, you know, flurry, this diarrhea of executive orders that keeps coming across, to point out that, you know what, most people, most of our neighbors, if we had the opportunity to talk to them in ways that are just calm and talking about the benefits of others, I don't think there'd be so much buy-in to this type of, you know, onslaught of, you know, he's standing up for America, he's making us great again. No, man, you know, that's not what's happening. Johnny, I see you're ready, man.
Well, I mean, yeah, and if Jacob's brought this up before, it's a populist movement. And so in a populist movement, you want to try and have certain language pieces or like sound bites that are on brand for your movement. And this is most certainly on brand for the Trump administration's sort of political push, right? And it's attack the educated, like make education a bad thing. Like, hey, listen up, education is really the enemy. You know who else is the enemy? Are these people who aren't from here. And that's not us believing that. I'm saying that's sort of the message of the Trump campaign. And then, hey, and I'm the hero and we're the good guys because we're going to fix this. You know, we're going to punish the enemies, right? And we're going to fix this. So it's right on brand for, you know, the intentions of the Trump administration. And, you know, it's, we talked about this. Jacob, you're a historian. You love history. Tim and I teach and we appreciate history. You know, we're part of that. We're of like minds here. Well, what has history told us? Not just what Mark Twain told us about history, which he said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. But if we're thinking about, you know, that age old cliche, you know, we learn history so we don't repeat the mistakes of the past. Well, let's look at patterns of the past. Universities, we know, are a place for the preservation of free expression, free ideas, and free beliefs, right? They're a place of, you know, advancing thinking, of doing scientific research, right? And of, you know, not only demanding, but setting the bar of excellence for all of our industries. And I'm not just saying Harvard here. That's true for trade schools. That's true for any kind of place of learning. It's where we, you know, have a space to learn together the best of our field or the best of the industry that we're in, right? So in any country around the world historically where there is an effort to break that norm or to reduce that freedom or that excellence, universities are the target. Yeah. That's true historically. We know from our colleagues around the world who are, you know, professors through different changes in governments and things who have said, you know, hey, you know, it's a powerful place because it is a mainstay institutionally in our democracies or in our nations for, you know, free expression, free ideas, free beliefs, for advancing people. You know, education is empowerment.
Right.
So an empowered citizenry is a strong democracy. Well, if you're not, if that's the opposite of what you want, well, then you better start, you know, aiming the target at the places where that's happening. And that's happening in our public schools, both our K-12 and our higher institutions. So you say things like, and this is, you know, Trump was quoted saying that these are breeding grounds for virtue signaling and discrimination. Well, that's a blatant lie, but it's a dog whistle in terms of saying, hey, these are the places where the problems are coming from. Well, they're only problems if you're anti-democratic.
Yeah.
They're only problems if you're trying to erode democracy. And so we just need to call it what it is.
Right.
You know, Harvard is a symbol of freedom, is a symbol of, you know, democratic education. And that's not saying it's a perfect place.
Right? No.
Democracy is messy, right? But it has held value to freedom of expression, freedom of ideas, deep commitments to the scientific method and to excellence around the world and to open dialogue, right? Into a level, setting a bar of a level that we can all benefit from.
And life-saving discoveries.
Yeah, and that's threatening, right, to a rising, you know, power that says, well, maybe we don't want a democracy. Well, if you don't want a democracy, then certainly, you know, attack the places that are not only symbols of it, but factories for it, right? And I know we critique that schooling as factories, but right. I'm using it really, you know, like outside of that critique, using it really intentionally here is like, well, if we don't want there to be, you know, industry will make it hard for those particular industries to exist. Hence, bringing it back around to the beef with Elon. Trump administration is adamantly against electric powered vehicles.
Yes.
Right? Elon Musk is very invested, to say the least, in EVs, in particular, his EVs, right? Tesla. So we could kind of say like, these are two pretty, transparently self-interested people, right? Beefing, but to Trump's attacks on Elon Musk's, you know, and the impetus for some of his is his, you know, disagreement with Elon, you know, is stemming from, you know, Elon's interest in EVs. And so to attack Elon Musk is also to attack and devalue electronic vehicles, right? So it's a beef of convenience and of political interest for Trump to have with Elon, because they're putting that monster bill forward that makes it harder for alternate fuels and alternate energies, right? Yeah. So you see, this is very political, it's very strategic, and it's on brand to attack universities, to attack electronic vehicles, to attack anything that goes against, right, that agenda that the Trump administration, and broader than just Trump, right? Trump is just, you know, one slice in this right now. It's more than just him, but of that belief system.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. Man, we're getting into it. Although, you know, and I know Jacob chimed in a little bit there, but I know he's ready to go when we come back for the last segment. Jacob, I want you, it's going to be Tim's choice throwing something out to Jacob to see if he can stump him.
I better find some thoughts real quick.
you better be ready. Yeah, you know, check it out. Hey, it's Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. International students, we want them. Busted Pencils, we'll be right back. I know I can dance. Come on, man. I know it. That's what. Yeah, dancing on Busted Pencils. Fully leaded. education talk. Educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the boards, and yeah, me, Dr. Tim Slecker. Man, international students, Trump beefing on Harvard. All of this back and forth, Johnny talking about history, democratic values, it all comes together, public schooling. Jacob, are we making any sense?
You're making tons of sense to me, Tim. I think I agree with a lot of what you're saying. You know, not on the last Friday show, but a Friday before that, I came to you guys with this whole Harvard thing to ask you more questions about it, because I thought it was going to be a big deal. It seems like it's becoming a bigger deal. On that show, you guys were telling me that, you know, this probably won't be a big deal for Harvard. Harvard is Harvard. Even through tough times, it'll still be Harvard. But when it trickles down to our state schools and our smaller schools and the attitude of attack from the Trump administration, that can start to trickle down and hurt people. And I think we're starting to see that. They're talking about a total ban of Chinese and Hong Konger students to the United States. That seems like a big problem to me. And I don't know what you guys think. I'd like to hear your opinions on it. But to me, it is a massive asset for America and for democracy that when you're a student and you're in China, you want to go to the United States. You want to be educated in the United States. And I would think that back in China, the most pro-American people in China are probably the thousands and thousands of U.S. educated Chinese people who over the years, you know, since whenever the 80s with Deng Xiaoping right. opening up China, you know, more and more every year, pro-Americans in China, in large part thanks to this education thing. It's a huge part of our soft power. Look at the heads of state around the world educated in the United States. And yeah. the nativist far right wants to get rid of what I would think is like our one of our greatest assets and one of the biggest parts of being a superpower.
Yeah. So, and Jacob, thank you for that, because think about it. What Jacob just said, we're exporting democracy by engaging in that international students coming here, and the expression and the experience that they have and really understanding. And Jacob, what a great point to point out. Really, we're going to ban students from China who come over here and potentially go back with ideas of freedom of thought, democracy, potentially starting to crystallize in their veins, in their DNA. We're going to stop that. That's a threat to democracy. And I guess they'll come back to Johnny, though. That's the intention, though, is that we're not really pro-democracy under this current administration. We're just not that into it anymore. You know?
Yeah, Tim. And I think we can come back around to this maybe in a class and session next week or anything, because related to this, and I'm going to give, you know, a little loop back around to, you know, Jacob bringing it up a couple of weeks ago about its importance is, you know, Harvard fighting this is really important.
It's
equally, like, that's what I want to emphasize too, because what's also being attacked and specifically aimed at Harvard is to control its curriculum.
Oh my God.
And we get into that. Like, a lot of teachers listening out there talk about, like, you know, canned curriculums and state imposed and federally imposed curriculums, like what we teach, how we teach, and who we hire to teach. We by and large have democratic freedoms around that are really important. And so that's attached. It's not in the same attack, but it's, you know, related to the very specific executive order and letters sent to universities and then being enforced with Harvard. So Harvard fighting it, you know, I'll end with some good news. Tim, you said, you asked if we were making any sense, and it's pretty hot here. and I'm definitely making scent because I can smell, I can smell it coming through my shirt. But on that note too, everything I've read and followed in this tends that this won't stand, right? That in court, this stuff will be, you know, it won't be upheld. It will still have the kinds of chilling effects.
It will still do the damage though. Yeah,
but it won't, it, you know, so big, big props to Harvard for fighting it, for, you know, the legal representation of this institution defending not only itself, but defending democracy and the university as a key component and a foundation, which we'll call public education, as a foundation of democracy. So Harvard's not just defending itself, it's defending public education and democracy.
Man, and on that, now it's time for your moment of zen. Education becomes most rich and alive when it confronts the reality of moral conflict in the world.
Thanks for listening to today's Busted Pencils broadcast. And remember, you can grab great podcasts chocked full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, always at the Civic Media website or at bustedpencils.com. Don't be late for homeroom on Monday, and be sure to catch next week's class and session on Wednesday, and find us on Friday for Jacob Producer's Choice. And of course, just like today, you can catch Busted Pencils at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite, a blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.